So I have an apology to make. So last week, when I mentioned the episodes for this week, I pronounced Triskelion, Triskelon. I know, it's terrible. And I just have to say, I know all of you out there were very upset, and you were all like, Eric, you don't know how to pronounce Triskelion? And I just have to make a confession right now. Richard and I have been lying to you for the past 23 episodes, let's say. I am not the Star Trek fan. Richard is.
Am I?
I thought so.
Okay.
When we swapped brains.
Oh, wow. Did that happen?
Yeah.
Okay.
So I don't know. I don't know anything about Star Trek, and Richard knows everything about Star Trek. So maybe, Richard, you should ask me what I thought about The Trouble with Tribbles.
What did you think about The Trouble with Tribbles?
I hated it. I thought it was the worst thing I've ever seen.
Yeah, it kind of is, isn't
this is
it?
This is the dumbest show. I don't know why you talked me into doing this Trek about nonsense. I'm very angry with you, and I don't believe that I ever want to see you again.
Okay. Was it that easy?
I'm done. Okay. What did you think about The Trouble with Tribbles, Richard?
What did you think I thought about The Trouble with
Tribbles? I think you loved it, and I thought, you know.
Eric, I have to tell you something.
Yeah, yeah.
I brought a friend to record the episode with us today.
Okay.
Here you go.
Oh my God, it's a Tribble. Oh, he's so cute.
Yeah.
Aw.
He doesn't purr.
Oh.
Doesn't have batteries.
Well, that's upsetting.
I can make purring noises.
I'll just put him right here, and we'll both look at him while we talk about The Trouble with Tribbles.
So I have to say, I didn't realize this episode had a plot.
Well, that's the interesting thing about The Trouble with Tribbles is that it doesn't really have a plot.
Well, it's
just sort of like a pile of stuff that happens.
But it had more of a plot than I remembered. Like, literally all I remembered was, oh boy, this is a Tribble. It's really cute. Holy shit, there's a lot of them. What are we going to do? Okay, everything's okay. And I thought it was just 40 minutes of, like, Tribbles falling on Captain Kirk.
That would have been tiresome.
No, it wouldn't have. You could, like, see all these different colors of Tribbles and, like, types. And they could have different, like...
So you really wanted The Trouble with Tribbles to be 50 minutes about the taxonomy of Tribbles.
I wanted just a Tribble nature documentary, yes.
Well, maybe you should make one. I'm sure that many Star Trek fans would enjoy watching that.
Okay.
I mean, just do it. I'm just saying.
I'll make up a Kickstarter.
Yeah, I mean, the interesting thing about The Trouble with Tribbles is that it's really sort of like it's almost like a slice of life episode. Like, yeah, there's some plot, and, you know, the Klingons are involved in the space station, and they mention the Organians again, which is like... You know, you've always been complaining about the fact that the show doesn't have a whole lot of continuity, and they sort of introduce these little things of continuity to sort of make the world feel a bit richer and a bit more connected, I guess. It's not just like they never mention what happened before. And I think it's different from a show nowadays that would approach it because...
Well, there was one episode where one of the characters says, oh, you're the same Captain Kirk who, and he mentions... two or three famous things that Kirk did. And I don't remember exactly when this is, but I think they were just two just random references that had nothing to do with anything. I think it would have been more interesting if they had been references to actual shows. Like, you were the guy who figured out what was going on with the Horta and the...
Yeah.
Yeah, you know, something like that would have been... You know, the show doesn't really go in that direction.
Well, I think it's weird, though, because... And I think it's a smart choice on the part of the... You know, of the script writer, because he obviously knows this is the first script that he ever wrote for Star Trek. And he wrote a couple other ones for, I think, the animated series. I believe he wrote for The Next Generation. And he became like a Star Trek guy. Like, he's written books and all this stuff. Joseph Pevney. So
I know that name. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And I'm not going to I don't know. Should I tell you this? Yeah, I'll tell you this. There is an episode of the animated series that Joseph Pevney wrote. And I'm not going to say what it's about, but you'll be very excited.
Is it about more Tribbles?
It might be.
Is it like 20 minutes of just Tribble taxonomy and like their society and what they eat?
I think that would be extremely boring. Only you would like that, pretty much.
Come on, it's Star Trek. There are a billion people out there who'd be really interested in what Tribble taxonomy is.
I'm sure. No, but, you know, and so he talks about the Organians, he talks about these things that Kirk has done, and he doesn't, like, directly reference anything. And I think in a show that was made nowadays, you know, they would actually talk about what happened on the Organian planet. They would talk about what happened at Errand of Mercy. And it's not that. It's just it's a reference that for people that are fans of the show and for people that watch every episode, they'll totally get it. And for people that have never seen the show before or dip in and out of it as their schedules allow, because, of course, we're talking about almost 50 years ago and nobody had DVRs. They probably thought that was some sort of venereal disease.
Isn't it? I'm sure like some really rich people had them.
Yeah, they sure. Uh-huh. That's you have no idea what technology was like in 1967, do you?
It was before I was born.
But yeah, and I think that's to the show's credit, and I think it's really nice, and it's just more of a it's more of a nice touch than anything else. It doesn't really affect anything, but for people like you that really focus on sort of this like meta continuity of a show, it does add a little bit, I think.
Yeah, I would say that. I agree with that. That sounds like a good thing you said. A bit of continuity that I would have liked in this episode. So, you know, every time I see a yeoman, I immediately like just patch in Yeoman Rand in my head.
Yeah, absolutely.
This peddler, I patched in Harry Mudd, and it became like 10 times of a better episode.
Well, you know,
like I think it would be funny if they just like, Mudd, what are you doing here? Oh, well, I escaped that robot planet and I become an honest peddler. And then, you know, because totally his role, Mudd would fit completely with that, a swindler guy. And he gets that ironic Muddish punishment at the end where he has to clean up all of these tribbles, like. That made the episode funnier.
It's funny because I remember reading something somewhere that they originally wanted Harry Mudd for this episode, and the actor wasn't available.
Well, he was probably on coke and hookers at the time.
I don't.
He had a really crazy personal life.
Really?
Yeah.
Really into Harry Mudd.
Found dead with a gay hustler and a lot of crack.
Huh. Well, that kind of makes sense.
Yeah.
When was that? The 70s?
No, later, like the 80s and 90s, like when he died. Huh. I don't know. I read it on Wikipedia.
Oh, Wikipedia. Well, I'm sure that's accurate. I was doing research, you know, before we recorded the episode, and I couldn't find it. And I looked on Memory Alpha. I looked on Wikipedia. I looked in a couple books I have, and I couldn't find any reference to this. So I may have just like completely misremembered this. I may have had a dream about it. I really don't know. Not like Richard. I don't dream about Harry Mudd often, but sometimes I do.
Look, every young gay Star Trek fan has to dream about Harry Mudd from time to time.
It's true. But yeah, I think, well, it's funny because what's the character's name in this episode?
Cyrano Jones.
Yeah. Cyrano
Jones.
Which
sounds like a blaxploitation film, you know?
Maybe it was, I don't know. I mean, I can see your point that Harry Mudd may have worked, but at the same time, the episode would have been very different because I think it would have been less about the Klingons and less about the Tribbles and more about Harry Mudd. And so,
yeah, but I think it would have been funnier to I think Tribbles and because the Klingon plot is very incidental. It's just, oh, the Klingons are bad. Who's the Klingon, you know, agent? Oh, it was that guy. The end. Well, we saved everything. Hooray.
It's kind of a...
I mean, the episode is called The Trouble with Tribbles. The Tribbles, even though they are nominally the B-plot, are what steals the show. So you could very easily have Harry Mudd and these Tribbles, and I think both of those elements would be ridiculously enough. And again, the Klingon plot isn't that interesting. And the episode itself has a ton of filler in it as it is. That scene when he's negotiating with the bartender for the price of the Tribbles goes on for like 1,000 hours. Like... everything, there are a lot of bits that just aren't funny interesting.
Well, you mention B-plot like this episode has an A-plot. I don't think it really does.
When you talk, okay, here's the issue with stakes. Klingons running around and sabotaging this planet. Stakes-wise, that's bigger than how are we going to get all of these Tribbles out of that. And obviously the two plots intersect, but when you talk about what their concerns would be, you would think the Klingons would be the more interesting, or more significant conflict in this.
Yeah, perhaps. And I think...
So it's a B-plot in that sense, as opposed to how much the story signifies, of course. Yeah, that is, it is, as you said, a pile of events, I believe.
Yeah, I mean, that's pretty much it. And I think, you know, as anything is an A-plot in this episode, yeah, the Klingons are, because they drive the action. I mean, the Enterprise is in this area because of Sherman's planet. K7 is there because of Sherman's planet. The wheat is there because of Sherman's planet. Everything is there because of Sherman's planet.
Yeah.
But we never see Sherman's planet. We don't know anything about it. We don't know even how many people live there. Like, we don't know why it's so important. We really don't know anything. It's just, it's the MacGuffin of episode to get us there and to drive some action forward and to provide some reason why the Klingons would be there at all. And in that sense, you know, it's just a bunch of stuff that happens. And, you know, I love this episode.
Oh, yeah.
I think it's really funny. I think, you know, the acting that especially Kirk gets away with in this episode is amazing, where he's like repeating himself a couple times and he's got these like weird line reads that are just hilarious. And, you know, the classic thing where he opens it and all the tribbles are falling off him, and it's like, number one, do this, and number two, close that door. You know, like,
the episode almost seems like a parody of a bad Star Trek episode, but done so cleverly that it's almost that it's okay. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah. And I think
it has every element you think when you think of a terrible Star Trek episode.
And it's really a shame, because the original series does comedy really well.
Yeah.
You know, I can think of Shore Leave Immediately, which is a problematic episode, but I would say it's probably a comedy episode and it's funny.
Yeah.
And then I Mudd as well, which is just pretty much a straight up comedy episode. And that's also very funny.
And I think that might be part of the reason I wanted him in this, because I just think Mudd is a funnier character. The actor is a funnier actor that, you know. And
but in some respects,
it would have made the episode even funnier.
But in some respects, I think that you need a straight man in this episode, and Cyrano Jones is acting as that straight man.
Yeah, but I don't think he completely is, because that whole bit when there's the bar brawl, which also goes on for like 1,000 hours, and he has that whole business where he keeps ordering drinks, and, you know, he's walking around like he's obviously supposed to be this, you know, wacky drunken peddler who's just a, you know.
Yeah, but I mean, his characterization and his role in the script are two different things. And a straight man can also be funny.
Yeah.
I mean, part of he's acting as the straight man in that scene, of course, because he's the only one that is not interested in fighting.
Or
that's what makes the scene funny, and so that's how a straight man is funny.
On the other hand, would you say he's acting like a straight man because he's not fighting, or he's acting like wacky because he's not paying attention to because he's using the business of the scene in order to get something that he wants out of that? Like,
yeah, either way.
Yeah, I would say he acts as the comic in the episode.
Maybe, I don't know. I disagree with that. I mean, I don't think he's very funny.
I think that's more of a, he's supposed to be the comic. He's not funny enough, and the writing of him isn't funny enough.
I really have to disagree with you. I don't think that character is supposed to be the funny element.
His name is Cyrano Jones, so, and he's what? Always, I mean, selling all these bad goods.
We've had a lot. That's not that funny. I mean, we've had a lot of characters with weird names in Star Trek that aren't funny. I mean, all the Klingons have funny names. You know,
I think
all the Romulans have funny names.
He's supposed to be a comedic con man character. I really think that.
I don't see it.
Well,
I don't see it.
Fuck you.
Because there's so many other things that are funny about this episode. I mean, Kirk is hilarious. Yeah. You know, I mean, he's got this whole dismissive attitude towards the Federation guy, which is just hilarious, because he's basically like, yeah, I don't like you. You know, I'm going to protect you because that's my job, but I don't care about you.
Yeah, like, I've never questioned the intelligence of a Starfleet officer. And he walks like two steps. Just sort of, till today.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
Like, ooh.
I mean, everybody gets their chance to be funny in this episode. I mean, Scotty at the end, of course, gets the punchline. You know, it's going to cause a little tribble for them. I mean, it's
well,
really.
Well, he has the bit with the brawl. I mean, that's a whole funny bit.
Yeah, I mean, Chekhov gets his moment to be something. An interesting thing, of course, is that both The Trouble with Tribbles and our next episode, Gamesters of Triskelion, I said it right. I think we're originally written for George Takei, and since he was out filming the Green Berets, they had to rewrite the scripts.
Okay.
So that's another reason why Chekhov is a much larger portion of these episodes than he had been in the previous, you know, towards the beginning of the season. I don't know.
And also, it's a funny fact about how this episode came to be, because he had needed Walter Koenig actually needed a new wig because the old one was wearing away at this point, and they accidentally ordered 1,000 of them. So
that is not true.
Yeah, I know.
What do you make of the Tribbles, though? Like, obviously they're just a funny plot device, and there's really no meaning behind them, or is there?
I think they're just a generic cute thing that just. The lesson of it is your typical, you know, you get something, but you aren't aware of the full responsibility. It's a Gremlins plot, basically.
Right.
You have something that, I mean.
Except funny.
Well, Gremlins was supposed to be funny.
Yeah, well, I mean, Gremlins was supposed to be funny, but Gremlins was also supposed to be horrifying, and this is not supposed to be horrifying. I mean, if anything, the Klingons are supposed to provide that for this episode.
Yeah,
they don't really.
No, I know, but it's, you know, the Tribble is designed to be a completely inoffensive creature. It's this tiny little ball of fluff that purrs. It, as far as we can tell, doesn't excrete any waste. It doesn't bite. It doesn't really...
has no teeth.
Yeah. It's just a little guy that just loves you. And...
except that it's extremely dangerous because it will eat all your food and take over your ship.
Well, that's the thing. And, you know... Who is the philosopher begins with? A Malthusian. It's a Malthusian conflict.
Yeah.
I don't know. I think it's just supposed to be a funny thing that... looks like it can seemingly be completely harmless, but turns out to actually have an unintended consequence.
Well, I think, you know, if you take Klingons as examples of, you know, space communism, right, and their stand-ins for the Soviet Union, let's say.
Spommunism.
The Tribbles are interesting because the Klingons are really... I would even, they're kind of afraid of Tribbles.
Yeah.
And we don't know why, and Tribbles don't like Klingons. So they have this immediate, like, reaction to them they don't have to anybody else.
Yeah, they treat them like we would if somebody held up a gigantic cockroach that was talking about how cute it was.
Yeah, and so I think that's interesting because it almost makes the Klingons seem, it's a really difficult thing to do because I think it almost makes the Klingons seem kind of ridiculous. Because they're supposed to be these great warriors and this great threat to the Federation. And, you know, the war was averted only because the Organian energy being stopped the war. But they're afraid of a Tribble.
Yeah, and you can picture at the end they have this... it's, again, it's like if somebody released a carton of rats onto a ship, you know, how they're acting about it.
Yeah, yeah. And it's almost like, you know, you could use the Tribbles as a stand-in for the Klingons in some respect, because I think in you know, in a couple of ways, the Tribbles are like the Klingons, right? Because, you know, Klingons, like Tribbles, want to expand, want to take over, use up resources, and they don't really care about what they're doing or what they're using so much. We don't get a sense that the Tribbles are sentient or intelligent, so we don't really know what they think about anything. I mean, if anything, they're probably, like, dogs.
Yeah. Food. Ooh, reproduction. More food. You know, that's it.
And it's definitely... they're definitely portrayed as comedic because this is a comedy episode.
Yeah.
But I can see the Tribbles... If they had had a less funny name, and if they were, you know, less cute... you could have had a really interesting episode surrounding the Tribbles as some sort of like existential threat to the Federation.
Yeah.
You know,
I mean, they're almost, it's almost a Grey Goo plot in a way, but
mm-hmm.
And there is the, I think that is the interesting point because Tribbles legitimately are dangerous. They do eat this entire food supply, and you know, it was only because it was poison that it was okay in the end, but. Yeah, you have a limited food supply. You have a creature. I mean, the assumption, I don't know if this was explicitly said, but where they're originally from, they obviously have a lot of predators against them because they don't really seem to have any defenses. So they're one of those species that survives by reproducing at such a high rate that you can't curb it all. But it's so few survive that it's okay. Insects do about the same.
Yeah, of course. Yeah, absolutely. One other thing I find interesting about this episode is Scotty's role in it, because this is probably the most that we've ever seen about Scotty before.
Yeah.
And he sort of gets a personality in this episode.
And it's a weird personality.
It is.
Because he hates going out. He doesn't like fun.
He doesn't like fun. He likes reading technical manuals. He finds that relaxing.
Yeah, like he's very sad that he's... And he was like, well, I was going to stay and, you know, read these technical manuals. And he's like, no, you've got to go, Dad. He just looks so glum.
And what he says, you know, Kirk is like, no, you're going on shore leave. And he's like, I...
Yeah.
It's like, oh, Scotty, that's so sad.
I know.
I think he's a man after my own heart.
And then, yeah. And then after,
you know, I would rather stay home and read than go to a party.
Well, so. You know, it depends on the party. After a while, I get partied out. But, and then I love at the end when he does get, you know, punished by being confined to quarters, you know, he just, this huge smile on his face, he says, oh, great, you know, I've got a new technical manual I wanted some to read.
I can finally catch up on my technical manuals. Yeah, it's cute. And I like the scene between Scotty and Kirk when Kirk is asking him, you know, what happened? How did this fight start? And, and, you know, Scotty does this whole thing and they were like, you know, they were saying this about you and they called you a Denebian slime devil and blah, blah, blah. And he's like, and that's when you threw the punch. And he's like, no, they insulted the Enterprise captain. And Kirk's like, okay.
Yeah, like he's almost upset that he didn't fight for him. Yeah,
it's you know, and also, I mean, one more thing about Scotty is that he the man orders a lot of scotch, and you have to respect that because that was like 8 ounces of scotch.
Oh, it looked watered down to me.
I don't know.
Maybe I mean, because Scotty wouldn't have his scotch with water.
Well, everything looks less colorful in space.
But then maybe their alcohol technology has like less alcohol or something. Wasn't there some kind of synthetic alcohol that doesn't?
Look, you're bringing all of this 24th century crap into it, and let's not even talk about that until we get to that.
Because I heard that was a thing.
Yes, there is something called synthahol, which is ridiculous.
Don't even do that. I mean, I disliked that we saw the entire scene, and then we had a description of the entire scene we just saw, plus the 20-minute bar fight, but, you know.
I like the bar fight. I just, you know, there's, at a certain point in this episode, you just have to give into it.
Well,
you're just like, this is great. I'm having a good time with this. I don't really care what happens. And it's just, you know, the end of it is incidental. They find out that Devlin or whatever his name was a Klingon agent.
I don't know any of character names other than the main cast, like, and Baylock. Well, that's literally everybody's name I know.
I've seen many of these episodes many times.
I know, so, like, you know.
I think one final thing to mention about The Trouble with Tribbles, and we've touched on this a little bit, is just how good Shatner is in this episode.
Oh God. Yeah. He's
like, he's totally going for it and he is having a lot of fun with it. And all of his comedic beats are amazingly well done. I mean, of course it helps that the script is really good and really funny, but he brings it up to another level, I really think.
I love the bit with, like, his chicken sandwich and coffee. Yeah, and I want my chicken sandwich and coffee. And he just...
I can't even pick out a favorite bit that he does in this episode because there are so many of them. And it's so rare that he gets a chance to be this funny in Star Trek.
Yeah.
I mean, as he got older, he sort of, you know, maybe poked a little fun at himself a little more, but... In the original series, not so much. And it's really fun to see that side of him.
Yeah.
So.
I have a question about the ending.
Okay.
So, is the bartender dead?
I don't think so.
I don't know, because he doesn't move. I watched him the entire scene, and he does not move a muscle. And this is right after they say that, well, the tribbles really were harmful to human life. And I don't know, like, and he's just covered in tribbles, and I don't know what happened to him, but I think they, like, killed him.
The weight of tribbles just killed him?
I don't know, or if just, like, they just ate everything he tried to eat and he starved to death, or he just, like, they climbed on him and he had allergic reaction. I don't know, but there's, like, any one of a dozen ways that a bunch of tribbles could have made, you know, they could have crawled down his throat and choked him to death, like...
Maybe he was just taking a nap.
But standing behind his bar?
Yeah.
Why not just pile up the tribbles and, like, curl up in the corner?
The business at K7 isn't very good, and he can't afford quarters, so he just has to sleep at his bar.
But he still could pile a bunch of tribbles, and that's a bed.
Oh, so you want him to sleep on dead tribbles?
They are dead. They were alive.
So you want him to crush dead tribbles to death?
You crush dead tribbles to death.
You know what I mean.
No, I don't. That's a redundancy in your phrasing.
All right. So let's tribble it out, which is appropriate because
1,348 tribbles.
10. It's 10. It's got to be.
Well, they meant that was the number of triples that are on the station.
Okay. All right.
How would it really take that long to pick up all the triples?
Probably not. You could just, I mean, well, you could vent them into space, but that would be mean. Oh, and isn't that great at the very end, before we move on to the Gamesters of Triskelion, isn't that great at the very end when they're all gathered around the captain's chair and they're having their great moment at the end, as they often do, and, you know, Scotty has his great, well, it'll cause a little triple for them,
yeah.
And they're all laughing, and Spock just kind of goes, you know, but, and there's that great, like, you didn't beam them into space, did you, Scotty? And Scotty's like, no, Captain, I would never do that. I gave them to the Klingons.
Yeah, the Klingons are going to beam them into space.
They will.
Yeah.
That's really sad. Yeah. All the Tribbles are dead.
Yeah. Scotty's actions caused the death of the entire Tribble population.
Maybe they ate the Klingons.
But then the Klingons find the ship stuffed with Tribbles. They just fly out, and then all the Tribbles take over and eat all of the Klingons.
And that's what happened in the Next Generation. The Klingons look different because they're actually Tribbles.
Oh, so that's the Ridge is like a Tribble, that the symbiote.
Yep.
Oh my god.
Yep.
That's actually really interesting.
Yeah, I thought you would enjoy that.
Do the Klingons and Tribbles like share consciousness? Are there's one like? Is there a dominant personality you do, or how does that work?
I'm not sure. They don't really go into it that much.
Well, in the Tribble documentary that I'm going to make, I'm sure we will research these.
I look forward to that, and I'll kick you $10.
Thank you.
You're welcome. All right, so let's move on to
the Hamsters of Triceratops,
the Gamesters of Triskelion,
the Teamsters of Timbuktu.
So I don't know about you, but I think that either we will have nothing to say about this episode, or we will have a lot to say about it.
You know how you say sometimes, like, this is one of those episodes that's like, if you like this, you like Star Trek, or mm-hmm. I think this is one of them.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, I agree with that.
This is, the direction was awful. Every fight scene made no goddamn sense. It was stupid. It was a little too rapey for my tastes.
Oh, that scene with Uhura.
Oh, yeah. And it's like, what's happening to your Uhura? And I'm like, she's getting raped. It's obvious. Like, this is really bad. What's happening?
This is really actually legitimately disturbing.
This
was on television in 1967. Okay.
And then you cut to, and it made even worse by, like, he leaves. He was like, grunt, grunt, grunt. And then, like, who comes into, so I'm like, oh, shit, now shit. And who comes into, you know, Kirk's room but this beautiful alien lady. And then Chekhov gets the train. He's scared, so good for him. Progressive television at this time. Like,
yeah.
I was not comfortable with the majority of this episode.
I think you're right. It's not objectively good, but I like it. It's just crazy. And the two parts of the episode, the Triskelion parts and the you know, search for Kirk parts, seem like they're from two totally different episodes, like tonally. Shatner is way overacting in this entire episode. I mean, like, with the whole, like, reaching out from the bars and screaming and, you know, like, you've got this camera zoom on his face at one point and he's just like freaking the fuck out and you're like, whoa, let's calm down here. Like, I don't know what's going, like, were you drunk when you were directing this? I have no idea. And it's really, but at the same time, it's really inert because the Thralls, all of them just have this very, like, flat intonation. They don't really react to anything, which, you know, of course, okay, that makes sense. I mean, they kind of have that, like, beaten out of them.
But we've seen that done in other episodes that was much more interesting. Like, in Return of the Archons, you had that flat thing.
I was about to bring that up.
Oh, well, then, bring it up.
No, I was just going to say, I mean, in Return of the Archons, you had characters that were very much like that, but there was much more of a sense of dread and sort of like restrained violence there under the surface than you ever find here. Like,
Begin with that festival, so you begin with a scene of horrible violence.
Yeah.
And so then when everybody's calm the next day, it's come with the memory that this is what they are all capable of and this is what they've already done.
Yeah,
so
totally.
It starts by revealing the darkness in Return of the Archons. These people don't really have darkness. Their fight is almost like turn-based combat. It's really like...
I mean, it's funny because... I think it's funny for two reasons. Number one, it's Star Trek's anti-slavery episode. And... okay. I mean, do we need one? I think even in 1967, we all knew slavery was bad. I think maybe it's good to be reminded of that fact every once in a while, but...
Well, you know, then they reminded us of
that. But they reminded us of it, so that's fine. I don't think there's a lot to say about that. So the you know, sort of this cultural level that Star Trek is so good at, not a whole lot there. And then on the other hand, on the actual, like, plotting level, it doesn't really make a whole lot of sense. Like, how did they find them? Like, why did they only take Kirk, Uhura, and Chekov from the ship? How do these things even exist? Like, their brains in a plexiglass bubble,
yeah,
but they've got this huge, like, city behind them. I don't know. It doesn't make any sense.
You know, I like the scene when he was talking to the brains, because that was a really well done scene. That was interesting. It's the typical when Kirk figures out the weakness of the superhumanly clever thing, and he figures out exactly how to exploit it. I like that, but...
They're betting on money. Why are they betting for money?
What were they called?
Need money?
Oh, what was the thing?
I don't know. I don't remember.
Ulocks, something.
Sure,
like that.
Something like that. Ulocks, I don't know.
Ducats.
Ducat. It wasn't Ducats.
Well, I think we should say Ducats.
Centauri Ducats? That's from a different show.
I love that show.
Me too.
I wish money were called Ducats.
That'd be fun. I don't know. I mean, what did you make of the characters in this episode? Because,
well, there's only really one. Like, the green hair lady is the only character. The others really are just kind of there. Like,
I mean,
the bad guy is all, I'm a bad guy, I've got, you know, bald head and a robe.
And that really actually pissed me off, because there was one moment, like, early on in the episode where Kirk is standing right next to him, and it's like, dude, just, like, punch him right now. Just punch him. And he will be unconscious and he won't be able to hurt you. And then you can take off your damn collars and you're done. Like, and that, you know, and of course, if he had done that, there would have been no episode. So that's why that did not happen. But
yeah, but at the same time, you could have blocked it differently to not give that option.
Yeah, exactly. It's just one of those weird things that it's like, do you not expect the audience to be at least a little bit with it? Like,
just,
I don't know.
Yeah. Just get somebody, get one of the other thralls to just be holding the blade at his throat the entire scene.
Yeah.
Good.
Yeah.
That explains why he doesn't just deck him.
Yeah, but, of course. And I mean, the other thing, of course, I mean, when the episode first starts, you know, they beam down to the planet. Well, they don't beam down. They just sort of be, like, captured or whatever. And they're surrounded by all of these people that they don't understand, and they all look crazy. And, you know, I will say that, like, you know, like we said in Journey to Babel when we discussed that episode a few weeks ago, you know, we've seen a lot more aliens this season, and they're definitely getting a little, I think they're using the less, the lowered budget, you know,
creatively,
because they're sort of giving us this taste of, like, these different people.
Yeah. Well, the main woman, she's wearing a LeMay bra and has a dye job, but, you know, it makes her look very exotic and alien. You know, the woman that Chekhov encounters, she has just yellow makeup on her skin and a very solitaire and a dubbed voice.
Well, like, let's talk about her for a minute, because I want to be disturbed by her, because I think that the show might be making fun of mannish women.
I can't tell. Yeah, like, it again, is he... I don't know, because at the same time, she does... The actress is very beautiful and does seem, you know... It's the voice is really the only thing that...
Yeah.
Chekhov seems to put off about, otherwise she is, you know.
I think if they had not dubbed the actress's voice, that was maybe a bad choice.
Yeah, it was certainly a I joke they're pulling the tranny scare on him, but that is what they're doing, you know, this is a woman. Oh, it was really they're hearkening to that.
Yeah, and it's a little disturbing, and it's not really something that Star Trek does. So it's a little off note for them.
Exactly. The issues with that within the philosophy of the show and just in general in 2012 are very obvious, but...
Yeah, no, totally. And I think you can see a lot of that with the whole man-woman thing that's going on with Kirk and what's her name? Shauna's her name. You know, he's talking about, well, love is one of those things. And he always brings up love with beautiful women. I wonder why.
Yeah.
but, you know, and so he's talking about man and woman. And then, of course, you've got this whole thing going on with the yellow-skinned woman and Chekhov. And I do appreciate Chekhov getting a little bit of his own medicine there.
Yeah.
Because he's kind of creepy. And so maybe he's realizing what it feels like a little bit.
Yeah. I mean, at the same time, I think it's interesting because... Like, alien or not, it's still not... I'm long of the theory that it's just as weird to sleep with an alien man as it is to sleep with an alien woman, no matter what your preferred gender is. I am definitely because it's still a different species, so it does, those genitalia are not for you as it is. So I think, in a way, the alien that Chekhov encounters maybe is intended to be kind of genuinely a hybrid of those two things. Maybe on their planet they don't have distinct genders, or maybe, you know what I mean? Like, certainly many sci-fi stories have done some form of that, so I don't even know. But the point is, in even assuming the best of intentions, it comes off weird in this day and age.
Yeah, it definitely does. And I mean, there's a strange undercurrent that I get from that character specifically in that scene specifically, which is kind of off-putting, I want to say.
Yeah.
I don't know if there's much else to say about it. I just think, you know, it's off note for the show, and it doesn't feel like Star Trek.
Yeah, and at the same time, it's not off-putting through any of her actions.
No, totally.
She is acting just as, you know, seductive, frankly, as Shauna is.
Yeah, yeah. Well, let's talk about the providers a little bit, because I think they're maybe the most interesting part of the episode.
Really? Because I was about to call them the least interesting.
Oh, well, all right.
Yeah.
Then. I say that because I have a hard time picking something that's most interesting about this episode. I mean, I certainly don't think the Thralls are all that interesting. I don't think that the concept of exploring the concept of slavery is that interesting.
It could just be a boring false note episode. Doesn't have to happen.
Well, you know, I don't think it's boring. And I like it because, like you said, if you like Star Trek, it's one of those episodes that you're going to like. And I do like it because it's just so crazy a lot of the time. And it is entertaining, and there's fight sequences and, you know, all of the stuff on the Enterprise while they're looking for the away party. Is totally fine and is enjoyable in its own right. You know,
there's that nice moment when, you know, Spock says, you know, I'm going to beam down to the planet. And the entire time McCoy has been, you know, making fun of him. And when Spock's about to go, he, you know, McCoy immediately says, well, you'll need a medical officer, so I'll go down with you. And we've previously established that McCoy does not like going down to planets. So him offering to do that is a very significant moment.
Yeah.
And it's one that, you know, yeah, having watched the bulk of second season, I recognize now.
Yeah, because there's definitely that assumption there that you know, they play off not liking each other, but you know, when push comes to shove,
yeah,
you know, McCoy and Spock do watch out for each other, and there is a respect there. You know, and McCoy, I think, more than Spock, because I don't think Spock really has a problem with McCoy. I think McCoy just is grumpy and uses an excuse to not like anybody. You know, he always likes to have some sort of, he likes to rib people, basically.
And then meanwhile, you know, Spock realizes that here's somebody who, Spock and McCoy have two very competing life philosophies, and I don't think Spock takes any offense to McCoy, because Spock is frankly so convinced that the way of logic is right that there's nothing McCoy could say that could really hurt him, because he's like, all right, whatever objection, I'll figure out a way of, you know, proving logic is better in the end. So it doesn't really matter. And, you know, space travel is boring, you know, sparring with McCoy, neither of them mean it personally, and it passes the time.
Yeah. And I mean, at the end of the episode, of course, Spock is proven right.
Yeah.
Because he followed the chain of logic to its logical conclusion, and they found the away party. So there you go.
There's just as many times that McCoy's proven right, and Spock recognizes that, I'd say.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, it's funny because I had this thought while we were talking that, you know, Kirk, Uhura, and Chekhov perhaps are not, they're not acting out of character, I'd say, but they're maybe a little bit off. And I can see this episode being more interesting and perhaps a stronger episode if it had gone a little bit more strongly towards exploring what being a slave does to people. And they just kind of fill it with a bunch of fight scenes.
And at this, because at this point, slavery in this culture is, there's a lot of fights, but otherwise the implication is that the providers take pretty decent care of these people. And maybe they should be...
I mean, aside from forcing them to fight to the death.
Well, what I was saying, maybe they should be geared towards a different occupation, which undoubtedly at the end, you know, Kirk makes them, turns them into benevolent gods. But otherwise, I don't think it's, you know, it's not like they're keeping them and, you know, not feeding them or anything like that. I don't know. If you want to say slavery is bad, the human rights violations didn't seem as major. How do I phrase this? It didn't seem like slavery sucked enough in this episode to go with a slavery is bad justification. And while I obviously don't think slavery is good in the real world, this, if I had not had that opinion, watching this episode would not make me change it, because you need to watch this episode with the ipso facto slavery is bad justification. So therefore, there's no point to it. It's a moral we already agree on.
Yeah, I mean, that's kind of a problem.
Yeah. I mean, if something like Uncle Tom's Cabin, which showed that, you know, slavery is pretty shitty. At the time that was published, a lot of people didn't realize that slavery was shitty, and the book opened their eyes. See, you know, again, even 1967, even with civil rights, we agree that slavery was not a really good thing.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, of course, there were issues surrounding, civil rights. You know, for Black people, but
that's certainly treats.
Yeah, and there weren't any legitimate spokespeople for anybody in America in 1967 actually calling to like re-enslave Black people. I mean, of course, I'm sure there were some, but
no. But for a very, very, very long time in American history, anybody, you know, while civil rights, you know, go back and forth, anybody who wants slavery is considered crazy. You know, that's not considered a sane view.
Yeah.
At all.
No, of course. We kind of got off track, but I do want to talk about the providers a little bit because.
Why did you find them interesting?
Well, I find them interesting because they're a weird mixture of like Roman sort of senator stuff and slaveholders.
Well, given that there are slaves who perform gladiatorial combat.
Yeah, like that, you know, it's definitely, I would be surprised if the germinating idea for this episode was not, you know, gladiatorial combat in ancient Rome. I would be surprised. I don't know that I really buy how this would happen, though. And that's the interesting thing, because I think I find the providers interesting, not for what they are on screen, but for what it implies about how they evolved and how this got started. Right. Because they say that they had humanoid bodies and they devoted themselves to intellectual pursuits instead of athletic pursuits. And eventually they became like multicolored brains, which, okay,
well,
fine.
It's interesting. But, well, this is what the very first episode, the cage, had these beings who had developed their intelligence so much that they lost any athletic ability and they, you know, used everything psychically. I would assume that it's a similar evolution, except this society made more, kind of saw it coming. I think what was the race from the cage in the menagerie?
The
big brain dudes.
Yeah, the big brain dudes.
Anyway, the big brain dudes just might not simply have thought about, you know,
Talosians.
The Talosians, yeah. They might not have thought about the next step, and they may have, you know, maybe the providers never developed psychic, you know, full-on psychic powers in the same sense, and they made more of a, all right, well, how are we going to preserve ourselves when we evolve? You know, maybe they just happen to see it coming, but I assume it was a similar thing.
Yeah, that could be. And I mean, the other, you know,
maybe
the other,
they downloaded their brains to the computers.
I mean, the weird thing is, though, there's a couple things that you can probably talk about there. Number one, of course, is that, like, you know, devoting yourself to intellectual pursuits and sort of losing your body, or in the case of the Talosians, just becoming very weak. You know, maybe that's boring. I don't know. It seems to be, because they really want, and the providers in this episode really want this really bloodthirsty combat to entertain themselves with. And there's the auction scene, which, of course, is very disturbing. More for its historical overtones than anything else. Yeah. I don't think the actual scene is all that interesting. I mean, disembodied voices yelling out fake money for Kirk is, you know, okay.
Well, I thought it was actually cool, because that happens when Kirk kind of breaks away from his punishment. He's supposed to be he's being executed, essentially, in that segment, and he's fighting back, and that's when the providers start betting on him, because, you know, they're almost impressed by his rebellion. They find it a sign of, you know, gumption rather.
Well,
than...
yeah, because I think the implication there, of course, is that they think that he's going to be more entertaining than the other thralls.
Yeah, they figured, all right, you know, he was just one that didn't work out, you know.
Which is also funny, because they have an Andorian thrall. And as we know, Andorians are very hot-headed.
I noticed that guy.
So that was weird.
I didn't know what he was called.
I don't think he had a name. I think
I mean race.
Oh, yeah.
Species-wise, whatever.
Yeah, yeah. You know, I think the other interesting thing about it, of course, is that, like, where did the rest of them go? Because there are only three of them. So are we supposed to believe that an entire planet of intelligent beings became three brains?
Oh, yeah. Or maybe, I don't know. I mean, how many voices did we hear? Or could that just be?
Three. I think we heard three.
Maybe that was just in their little clique. I mean, there's only a few slaves. Maybe each group of three brains has like a dozen slaves working for it at any one time.
Yeah, maybe. I don't
know. And, you know, we're just seeing one house.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, that is something that Star Trek does. They sort of imply larger numbers than they have the ability or money to show. Yeah. So, yeah, that's true.
Like an RPG.
What do you think about the end of the episode, which, you know, it ends with Kirk winning this 3-on-1 fight, which, like you said, is very much like turn-based combat in an RPG.
Yeah, but didn't they, like, talk about, like, well, if you get onto the blue part, you'll be lose a weapon, and if you're on the... And they totally don't pay attention to
I think they pay attention to it a little bit, but I think, you know, in terms of, like, blocking of the fight and things like that, it's... He definitely does... Kirk steps on the blue sometimes,
and they step on the yellow at times, and nobody loses a weapon. And
But it's not like he's just jumping into the blue parts.
But at the same time, why introduce the rule when you're not going to use it? Like, that's as far as an economy of dialogue type of thing.
I don't know. I mean, they sort of use it. I mean, I don't care about it that much. It's kind of like, you know, color inside the lines. If you go outside the lines a little bit, it's not a problem.
I guess what I'm saying is, I thought that you know, when they mentioned that, I thought there would be a second where, like, Kirk was almost about to be killed, you know, and then, you know, the other guy stepped into the yellow part and, you know, stop, you know, disqualify, like, just have a tiny moment like that.
I think maybe it was just to justify the blocking of the fight. I don't know. Yeah.
I also thought there would be Nazis based on that logo, but no space Nazis this time.
Apparently that's a real thing.
Space Nazis?
Well,
yeah, the Nazis actually, like, in history, like, the Nazis are not actually in outer space. Like, there are some horrible people who are still Nazis on Earth, but they don't have a moon base, Eric. That's not a real thing.
I mean, the Triskelion, like, that's like a thing. Like, that's I don't know. I looked it up. It's like a real thing.
Okay.
Like the, you know, swastika.
Yeah, which were Nazis. That's what we're talking about, Eric.
No, the symbol. Like, the
swastika was the Nazi symbol.
No, I'm not saying it. That's not a swastika. That's a Triskelion. It's
I know,
different.
But it looks like one.
Okay.
I figured that that's what it was going to be.
Well, you're wrong.
I'm sorry. It turned out it was, you know.
Well, it wasn't a swastika, though.
No, but I didn't realize that it was a real symbol, and I thought that it was a similar symbol. But they're not going to put a real swastika on a 1960s goofy sci-fi show.
That's like saying you think the Red Cross is a Christian church.
I kind of do.
Okay, well, fair enough.
I asked for communion once, and they got very confused.
That's Catholic, not Christian.
That's true.
Sorry if you're Catholic. But I think, you know... The end of the episode is of course problematic because it's Kirk again just deciding that these people would be better off if they're free. And at the end of the episode, of course, you know, Kirk frees them and provide, you know, the providers say, yes, we'll take care of them. Is that a happy ending?
I mean, it is and it isn't. It's the same ending that we've seen in every time that he gets rid of the evil demiurge. What's the Gnostic evil god thing? Demiurge?
What? Yeah,
you don't know Gnosticism?
Demigods?
Demagogue?
I don't know anything about Gnosticism. What the fuck do you think I am?
I thought you knew something. Okay. Well, this is the same decision that he's made in any time there is this entity that's having tyrannical control over things. In most of the episodes, he ends up destroying the evil computer or the evil false god or the evil whatever. He realizes that they're not doing this out of malice or evil, but they're just bored. And I think they've completely forgotten that being killed in an arena thing is bad. Like,
yeah, it could be.
Because they are just pure thought. They don't realize it's a problem. They think of it as much as we do characters in a video game. We don't really have a...
Yeah, they've completely forgotten what it is like to be physical. And you know, we don't know how long they've been like this. It could be, yeah, you know, hundreds of thousands of years.
Yeah, so I think his plan makes sense because he's able to... Because he realizes that they have these powers and they do have a sense of caring for these people. I mean, when they say that, you know, we provide everything for him, they seem proud of that fact almost.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
They feel they're doing their duty. So he really kind of just shifts what their duty is and gives them an even bigger challenge. And frankly, it's like the end of Wrath of Khan, and not Wrath of Khan, the Space Seed, where he says, you're right, you're evil, but you just need a project. Here's a project. He's giving them a project to do.
Yeah, and I mean, if we go back to, you know, what we said in previous episodes of Trek about there, this idea that it's not okay to construct your own little world divorced from the rest of the galaxy, in the same way, it's not a good thing to be idle and to have nothing to do. And so, you know, the goal of life really is work and is building something. And so problems arise when, you know, beings of supreme intelligence don't really have anything to do.
Yeah. Well,
and that's almost a more disturbing genesis of evil than the standard one in a way.
Yeah.
Because it implies that, you know, given the right conditions, almost anyone of sufficient intelligence could be evil.
Well, of course, that's you determine where your line of who you no longer consider human really, and that's who people are. It's okay to do evil to.
Yeah,
banks who are, you know, foreclosing on, you know, poor people's mortgages, we consider that an evil act, but they consider it just business, and they aren't really thinking of them as people. You and I may say, oh, well, that's a family, that's a, you know, human being, but they're just seeing it as numbers on paper.
Yeah, yeah. All right, well, now that we've thoroughly depressed everyone.
Well, I
What would you give this episode?
I would give it a 5.5 triple.
I give it a 5.
Well.
Yeah. All right.
I liked her green hair.
Her green hair was good.
And that was a kicky little silver bra.
So next week we will be talking about A Piece of the Action,
which is the other episode I've seen.
Oh, good. And The Immunity Syndrome.